Tonight's shir, Parshas Chukas. V'yikoylecha fara aduma tmima. The Midrash says that the tam of fara aduma was not revealed to anyone except for Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Since the fara aduma was a kapara for the Chet Ha'Egel, and Moshe Rabbeinu was not involved with the Chet Ha'Egel, therefore he alone was given the schus, the right to know the tam of the fara aduma. So the question is asked by Rav Arya Leib Tzintz. He says, wait a second, there was others that were not involved with the Egel. There was Shevet Levi, Bechlal, and Aaron HaKohen, whatever, that they were, it was against the Egel, and Shevet Levi, Bechlal, had no part in the Egel. So how come they weren't given the tam of fara aduma? So he answers that there's a difference. And even though Aaron, Shevet Levi, they didn't have an active part in the Chet Ha'Egel, but they were there. Just being there, being in the environs, being next to this terrible sin that was going on, they couldn't help but be contaminated from the poison of the sin. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu, not only was he not involved, but he was up on the mountain on top of Har Sinai. So Meili wasn't even there, so that's why he had no connection, not only no connection, he didn't absorb any of the poisons either of the sin. And Meili, he was totally pure of it, and therefore only he was given the tam of fara aduma. The mashal likened to second degree smoke. Right? I know, I've heard of it. There was a fellow years ago, he was no longer alive, he was a doctor. And later on in his life, he got very ill, whatever, and himself had to be checked out in hospitals, whatever. And they noticed that his lungs were black, totally black, his terrible lungs. So they asked his wife, says, how many packs of cigarettes did he smoke a day? So it was terrible. So she says, what are you talking about? He said, my husband never put a cigarette to his lips his whole life. He said, it can't be. It was black. So they realized, what was it? It was secondhand smoke, because he used to hang around a lot of, had meetings or whatever, and things with people smoking all the time. She was constantly hanging around people smoking, even though he didn't, just breathing in the smoke in the room, it contaminated him and ruined his lungs. So Meila is the same idea, right? Even though Shevet Levi per se weren't, they didn't actually do it, you know, they didn't put the cigarette to their mouth, but just being there, they couldn't help but be contaminated with the sin. Brings here on the pasuk Zos Ator Adam Ki Yamus Bo'ohel. Person has the Mimimis Atzmo in the Ola Shel Torah. It brings here a story of an Avreich that when he was in yeshiva, learning, he had a mashkiach. They used to darshan the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that said pas b'melach tochal may masura tishta asta the darka shel Torah. The erech Torah is you have to eat bread, drink water, etc. And he used to say, besides the pasha pshat in the Mishnah is also telling us that a person has to sometimes, you know, put aside the, you know, worldly pleasures if he wants to make sure his learning goes well. In other words, example, person's learning, let's say, and then he has a taiva, oh, I'd like to take a drink a cola, you know. So he said, what happens? Person, so he gets up, he goes to the fridge, takes out a drink. He said, this kills the, you know, the retzef, like the continuation of his learning. You have to stop, get up, and it breaks the flow. Right? And therefore, a person has to, you know, treat it like, no, pas mel tochal, I'm not going to go for other things. Because by going for other things, it breaks up one's learning. There is a mashkiach used to say this quite often. Anyway, that's the background to the story. What happened? So this avreich, one Thursday night, decided he wanted to do mishmar, to stay up all night learning. So he got permission, of course, from his wife. And he went to the local Beis Medrash. He lived in Bnei Brak. He went to the Beis Medrash there. And around 10 o'clock, after things were quiet in his home, went there to start learning. Fine. So he sits down, starts learning. And all of a sudden, I don't know, he got a terrible cough. Started coughing, coughing. And he really could have gone for like a nice, you know, drink, a cup of water, at least something, you know, to soothe his throat. And he kept coughing, but before he got up to get the cup of water, you remember, you know what Mashkiach always said, it's going to break up your learning, don't get up, you can do without it, you know. So he stayed into his sefer, and he was learning some more. And then what happened, it got really bad, it was getting worse and worse and worse, and he couldn't concentrate. He just kept coughing and coughing, and so he was thinking, well, what should I do? And it was already 1:30 in the morning, and said, well, if I go home and get a drink and then forget, I'm probably not even going to get back here. And so he didn't know what to do, so he thought, he had a brainstorm. He remembered that in the second story of the building, there's another Beis Medrash, and he knows there they have in the hallway there outside the Beis Medrash, there's a coffee machine. And he says, wonderful idea. I'll go get myself a nice hot cup of coffee, soothe my, terrible cough I have, and I'll be able to get back to learning and finish up learning till the morning. So, wonderful. So he runs upstairs, there's the coffee machine, it's one shekel, bargain, puts his hand in his pocket, no shekel. It's not one shekel, nothing. Now he's not going to go home for the shekel. So now what is he going to do? Nothing, goes back to learn. Cough, no cough, sits and he starts to learn, doesn't know what's going to be. What happens? All of a sudden, you can imagine, like 2 o'clock in the morning, pretty quiet there, he's all alone there. All of a sudden, door opens up, Avreich walks in, another Avreich walks in with a cup of coffee in his hand, hot cup of coffee, walks up to him and says, here, would you like a cup of coffee? It's like, he thought this was it. This was Eliyahu Navi. 2 o'clock in the morning when he needs his cup of coffee, guy comes in out of nowhere, says, here, hot cup of coffee, this must be Eliyahu Navi. So, he says, is your name Eliyahu? So he says, no, let's explain what happened, Lamaisa. He said, this guy, he says, I was at a chasana in Yerushalayim, and I came back very late, just now, came off the bus here in Bnei Brak, and I had such a taiva for a drink, a nice cup of coffee, that I said, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it home unless I have a cup of coffee. So I'm wearing a cup of coffee, and I realized, he said, I learn upstairs in the Beis Medrash upstairs in this building. So I'll go upstairs, get this cup of coffee, and then I'll continue, make my way home. Fine, so that's what I did. I just went into the building here, went up to the second floor to the coffee machine, and I pressed the buttons, the coffee cup comes down, the coffee with the milk, sugar, everything. I grabbed the cup of coffee, about to make a bracha, and all of a sudden it hits me. I'm fleshy. I just sat the chasna, I just ate meat. He says, I can't have this cup of coffee with milk. So I didn't want to, pour it down. So I said, shot in the dark, I'll go downstairs and see maybe there's somebody there, And here I am, and I see you're learning here. So that's why I'm offering you a cup of coffee. Shkacha pratis, for those who follow in the ways of Hashem. Okay, so a beautiful little story here. He brings on the word lahakti sheni. That there was a mishpacha, and the parents had a few kids in the family, and one kid was he was a little slow, let's say. Okay, he's in school and at home, and he was just a little bit behind. He wasn't abnormal, but just like that little bit slow, which made him, people were constantly poking fun at him. Okay, his siblings, and that's the siblings. We can imagine he goes to school, he's in cheder, he asks these questions that are, not exactly, on topic or the silly questions, and the kids are constantly poking fun of him and laughing at him and making fun. At his difficulties, this kid. Anyways, so the father telling the story about his child, and he says that. Weird thing I noticed about him says that whenever somebody, which happened quite often, would make fun of him, say something, a bad word to him or a joke, I noticed he was like whispering, whispering. So I know every time somebody says something, he's like whispering. I thought it was a little strange. So first I didn't make much of it, but then I saw it kept continuing, and so I approached my son, 9-year-old. Keep this in mind, he's a 9-year-old kid. So I go, I approach my son, 9-year-old son, and I asked him, I notice when every time somebody says something to you, hurts your feelings, whatever, you whisper something. What? So he said, you know what he tells me? Listen to this. 9-year-old kid. He said, I was sitting in shul one day, and I see a copy of a sefer called Leinu L'Shabeah, Silverstein. And I'm leafing through it, he says, and I notice a story that with Rav Chaim Kanievsky, right? Famous story that Rav Chaim says that if a person gets embarrassed, somebody embarrasses him, right? But he doesn't say anything, he doesn't get back, he doesn't get angry, he just is quiet and accepts it, and he's in the group of Ne'alavim, Einam Olvim, he just is ashamed, but he doesn't ashamed, he's quiet, accepts it, doesn't say anything, that person has a tremendous, tremendous power of bracha. There's stories over there how people did this, that he needed a Yeshua, so Rav Chaim said, find somebody who's in that category, you know, that's people embarrass him, whatever, he doesn't give back, he doesn't return, just, and then ask for a bracha from that person. And it has tremendous, tremendous power. And then, sure enough, that's what the person did, and then it worked, and he got a Yeshua, etc. Anyway, so this boy, he says, I read this story, and I thought to myself, wow, this is amazing. Why? Because if that's the case, he says, is there anybody out there that has the power of bracha, more power of bracha than I do? Right? Because people are constantly, you know, making fun of me and saying bad things about me, and I don't get back, I don't say anything, right? So I've got this tremendous power of bracha. So, you know, father's recalling, this is what father's son's telling him. And he says, and then you know what he tells me? He says, so then my son, feeling that way, he said he went to various shuls in Beit Midrash, and he saw that, you know, they have some nice, these ptakim, these pieces of paper hung up, you know, daven for a refuah shleima for so and so. And he made a list of all these people that need a refuah shleima, and he memorized them so that any time somebody makes fun of him, he doesn't answer back, and he's bal peh, by heart, he recites these names of people who need a refuah shleima. Because he realized that, he says, he has the power of bracha. He says, and that's pshat. And he said that every time it was somebody was embarrassing him, he would whisper. He was whispering these names of these cholim, they should have refuah shleima, because he felt that, based on Rav Chaim, said he has the power of bracha to help bring a refuah shleima for these people. Unbelievable. 9-year-old child. In the Sedra, that the Klal Yisrael, group of Klal Yisrael spoke out against the man. They said, this food, this man, ugh, you know, we're disgusted with it, whatever. So after that, the Pasuk relates that Hashem sent Hanachashim Asrafim, these fiery serpents, to kill the people, punish them. So the Rokeach asks, why Dafka did Hashem send Nechashim? What was one thing after the other? You know, they said, this man or whatever. So why did Hashem send, of all things, snakes? So he answers that it was to remind them of the first snake. Who is the first snake? Nachash HaKadmoni, the Nachash in the story of Adam and Chava. Now why did the Nachash do? He spoke Lashon Hara against Hashem. He said, Hashem doesn't want to eat from this tree of Eitz Hadas, because you'll be like him, and, you know, competition, you'll be like God. And he was speaking Lashon Hara against God. So in Mele, what were the people doing over here? Basically the same thing. Here Hashem, you know, gave them this wonderful food called man, you know, to survive with in the Midbar. And what did they do? This terrible food. Speaking Lashon Hara against the provider, Hashem. So therefore, just like the first one to speak Lashon Hara was the Nachash, so then for Hashem sent this Nachash to remind them of the Lashon Hara that they're speaking now. Not to not continue to do so. Brings here a story that there was once a woman is teaching in a school called Nesivas Moshe, which is made for families that either not yet frum or becoming frum or whatever, the children of these families, So she recalls the following. She says that she was teaching one day, and she told the girls in the class that there's a test coming up the next day, and she said, told the girls, but don't worry, if you study really well, you know, then Bezrat Hashem, with Hashem's help, you'll matzliach, you'll be successful. So all of a sudden one of the girls pipes up and says, what do you mean Bezrat Hashem, with Hashem's help? I don't need Hashem's help. I have my own brains. I don't need Hashem. What do you need Hashem for? Right? I have a seichel. I have a head. I have brains. I don't need Hashem. Okay, she comes from a non-religious home, so okay, can understand a little bit where she's coming from. But the teacher very nice explained to her, Chas v'shalom, you can't talk like that. It's not right. What do you mean? We always need Hashem of Hashem. But the girl's saying, nah, I don't need it. Why do I need Hashem? I know I'm smart. I can do well in the test without Hashem. But what the fuck? Okay, that was the end of that. Next day, the girls come in for their test. Teacher hands out the test. She says, you're never going to believe what happened. This girl gets the test, put that in front of her, takes out her pencil, do the test. She drew an absolute blank. She couldn't answer one question. She was just like, So she started crying. The teacher said, what's wrong? She says, I don't know. I said, I studied for this test. I knew everything. I knew the information inside out. But I can't think of anything now. I blank. I can't answer one question. Started crying. And then she gave a tefillah to Hashem and said, Hashem, forgive me. Slachli. Says, Hashem, I shouldn't have said that. I know I was wrong. And I need your help. I see you need your help. It's an interesting follow-up story here, very, very similar actually, about a break. He came to Rav Chaim Kanievsky with the following story. He says, I went to the hospital recently, the other day, with my son. Yeah, and he had some problems, he had some tests or whatever, and we met with a certain doctor, a very high-ranking doctor, in the hospital, professor, whatever. And he sat down with us and explained us things that we should do, etc., to help our son, whatever. So after the meeting was over, so I got up and I said, thank you very much, doctor, for all your help. And I said that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help, that everything you said to us should, bear fruit and should be good, and my son should have refuah. So what is this guy? This doctor is a total, not religious, as you'll see in a second, person. And he says, what do you mean, Bezrat Hashem? He said, I don't understand you guys, you're from me. He's like, what do you bring God into the picture? What do you mean, Bezrat Hashem, what I told you should work? I'm in control over here. He said, what do you bring God? What do you have to go to other addresses, He says, I'm in control. I'm the doctor here. I told you what to do. What does God have to do with this? Okay, forget it. I'm in control, okay? So the Reich was shocked what he heard. He says, excuse me, what do you mean you're in control? You're not in control. He goes, yes, I am. No, it's not God, it's me. I'm in control. Anyway, he couldn't believe his ears. He was shocked that he could say something like that. So he came to Rav Chaim and he told him the story. So Rav Chaim was also like, wow. He said, how can he talk like that? So he said to the Avreich, he says, just don't worry about it. You'll see Hashem will take care of things. Hashem will take care of things. Fine. So that was the end of that. The Avreich, what happens? 2-3 days later, he gets a phone call. Late at night, sort of, close to midnight. Because who could that be? Picks up the phone. Who was it? It was his doctor. So he said, the doctor says, sorry to bother you at this hour. He says, do you remember this? I'm the doctor. He says, yeah. He says, well, I just called you to tell you that you were right. He says, what do you mean? He says, well, you remember we had this thing before you left, and you said, Bezrat Hashem, and I said, who needs Hashem? I'm in control. I told you I don't need Hashem. I'm in control. I said, yeah, I know. So he says, well, you were right. He said, I'm not in control. He says, why do you say that? He says, well, I just came back now from a very, very embarrassing situation. He says, what happened? He says, well, as you know, I'm a top-ranking doctor, whatever, so I give lectures, different places, whatever. So I was lecturing this evening in front of hundreds of doctors. I gave a lecture, and I was standing there up in front of everybody, giving this speech. And you're not going to believe what happened. He says, what? He says, it's never happened to me before in my life, but I lost total control of my bodily functions. Right there, I just dirtied myself, right? In front of everybody. He said, never happened, okay, maybe when I was a, you know, 2-year-old kid, but here I am, a grown man, in front of all these people, and I had no control. I had no control of myself. So I saw you immediately. I said, that's it, you're right. Here I am, you know, telling you I'm in control. I see, I'm not in control. So we see from here, besides the main lessons of the story, but we see what a pintle of yid is. He said every Jew has this spark of, as non-religious as he might be, has this Jewish spark in him. And that's his doctor. Why? So first of all, it's a big thing that he made the connection. You could say, well, was that one thing to the other? Something happened here. Okay, but he made that connection that he put, you know, he got Mita connected Mita because he said he was in control. Hashem showed him he was in control. He had to, you know, connect the two situations, and he did. So that's only because of the pintle yid. And secondly, that he admitted it. You know, he didn't have to call up the Reich and say, okay, you're right. You know, that was a big thing to do, to admit he's wrong. Also, only a yid could do such a thing. Zira Maisa. It happened in the diamond industry, diamond building where they bought the bursa, the diamonds. And there was one of the people working there in the complex. He had in his pocket an envelope with a diamond in there that was quite valuable. It was worth $80,000. A diamond with 8,000. It was in like an envelope in his pocket. So he was walking in the hallway, and he didn't realize it, but the envelope fell out of his pocket. So a little bit later on, or whatever, he, you know, wanted to take the envelope out, and he saw it wasn't there. Of course, he, like, you know, really, I went crazy. You know, it was like $80,000. Okay, so he quickly runs back to the hallway, you know, where he was, you know, looking, you know, tracing his steps, you know, no, nothing, can't find it. Looked here, no, couldn't find it anymore. So he figured it must have fell out of his pocket somewhere, and he didn't take it out. Where? So he had an idea. He went to the company that's involved with the Shmirah, the guard, you know, and there's cameras, because in these places where people, there can be ganavim, and, you know, there's cameras. So he figured, hey, maybe the, you know, cameras picked up. So he did so. So first, of course, he had to call the minhel of the manager of the whole company, building, whatever, and he got the okay, and they brought in the film, and they played it, and sure enough, they saw in the hallway there where they see, you know, you can see on the film him walking the hallway and his envelope falling out of his pocket. Okay, and then they saw the envelope lying there, and watching the film more and more and more, and then, sure enough, one of the chashev people that's been in the business for many years, see him walking in the hallway there, bending down, picking up this envelope, looking inside, sticking in his pocket, and then walking up. So they caught the thief. So the minahel, the manager, calls in this guy. And just, you know, doesn't say anything first, and says, there, have a seat. And he starts talking about this, talking about that. And he says, oh, by the way, by any chance did you happen to find a lost diamond here? And it was an envelope. Do you ever, diamond envelope? I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, no idea what you're talking about. He says, that fell down, somebody lost it. You didn't see it by any chance? No. He says, what about in the hallway in the third floor there? Like, you didn't happen to be walking through the hallway in the third floor by any chance, were you? He goes, why would I, when I'm bored, why would I walk in, why would I do walking in the third floor? So he saw I wasn't getting anywhere with him. He says, okay, shut the lights. So I turned on the video, and there it was. No arguments. Saw him picking the arms, putting it. The guy, of course, was embarrassed, you can imagine, and the minahel let him go, and said he's not allowed to be there anymore, whatever, and got rid of him, and matzav lo tov. Why are we mentioning this story? Because the nimshal is quite clear. right? That so too with us. After 120 years, Hashem's going to bring us, you know, up to the Beis in Shalmala and going to play the movie of our life. And we says, and we're going to say, we didn't do anything wrong. I never did. Oh yeah. Once the video's played, what are you going to say? And he said, and even more, he says, when you think about it, this guy that picked up the dime, doesn't he know? I'm sure he knew that there's cameras, right? So how could he have the, you know, gall to say, no, I didn't do it, what are you talking about, it, knowing that there's cameras there, or even pick the thing up to begin with, and just pretend nothing happened, when knowing that there's cameras? So the answer is not the kasha is not a kasha. Why? Can we do the same thing? We know there's Ayin Ro'ah and Shomaz. We know Hashem's watching, Hashem hears, and we do things. How? There's cameras. It's going to be played back to us. How can we do it? How can we do it? That's the way we are. V'ispala Moshe be'ad ha'am. It's a beautiful story here of power of tefillah. So there was a Moel who one evening gets a call from this woman and says, we had a baby and tomorrow's the 8th day and we want to know if you can do the bris for us. So he said, sure, you know, that's my job, no problem. So he said, they were koveya for next morning, set at 7:30 in their house to come to their house, and I'm fine, no problem. So the moal next morning goes to the home, 7:30 arrives, you know, a little bit early, of course, 7:15, make sure. And he approaches the home. First of all, he says a little bit strange because he didn't see any, like, you know, you normally see cars parked all over, you know, because like a simcha, you know. And nothing. Comes to the house, knocks the door, quiet, you know, not like, you know, rustle and hustle and bustle like there usually is when there's a bris going on. Nothing. So he, you know, knocks on the door and a lady answers. But again, quiet in the house, nobody, nothing. Quiet. And he's not sure he has the right address. He says, is this someone? Yeah. He says, you're the moel? He says, yeah. He says, yeah, come on in. He says, okay. He says, what's going on here? She goes, oh, what's going on? She says, okay, listen, I have to speak quickly because I'm in a rush. But this is the story. See, you know, I gave birth like a week ago, and this is the 8th day. And yesterday we were talking, my husband and I, should we make a bris? Should we not make a bris? You know, obviously not a religious family, you know, right? Should we make a bris or not? Back and forth, maybe yeah, maybe not. We said, okay, we'll make a bris. But listen, Rabbi, I said, we didn't want to make a big deal about it, you know. So you know, my husband went to work, and you know, I have an appointment at Kupa Cholim. So I'm leaving you the baby, but don't worry, because in a half hour the mitapelet's coming, you know, a woman to take care of the baby, so don't worry, but I'm in a big rush, but thank you for coming. And she leaves. He says, this is absurd. He's at home alone with his baby, and no mother, no father, no bent time, no mitapelet, and now what? So he's thinking, what should I do? So he figured, I guess I'll give the bris. I mean, you know, this is 8th day, he needs a bris, so I have my things here. So, okay, so he gets this thing set up, whatever, and he needs a sun deck, you know. So, okay, I guess I'll be the sun deck also, you know. So he sits down, puts the baby on his lap, you know, has all the everything ready, whatever. And that's it, he performs the bris on this baby all alone in the house and with the kid on his lap. So, you know, what happens after a kid gets a bris? He cries. So the kid's crying and crying and crying, and he's just like sitting there with this kid crying his eyes out, and he started crying. He said, what else is there to do? You know, he said, this is so absurd, you know. And he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, he said, you got to bring the Geula. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, look at this. Would you ever hear such a thing? I'm all alone making it for this baby. Anyways, and as he's crying with this baby, he gives a tefillah to Hashem and says, Hashem, please help this boy, that despite the family, you know, that he's coming from, that he should grow up to be a Ben Torah, you know. Anyways, fine, sure enough, a little bit of the pellet came, woman take care of the baby and gave it over to her, told her instructions, had what to do, whatever, and that was the end of that. Ad kan hakafal. The story continues 13 years later. 13 years later, this mole gets another phone call. Hello? Who is it? This woman says, don't know if you remember me, but 13 years ago, you did a bris for my son, and, you know, I had to leave, and you were alone with my son. He goes, oh, how can I ever forget, you know what I mean? So, yeah, of course I remember you. He says, listen, Rabbi, you helped us then. I think you maybe can help us today as well, 13 years later. He says, well, what do you mean? What's going on? He says, well, the strangest thing happened. My son, you know, he's 13 now, and he goes to regular, you know, non-religious, you know, chiloni, you know, school, whatever, and all of a sudden, the other day, he comes home, and he says that he doesn't want to go back to school, he wants to go to yeshiva. So, I said, what are you talking about? What do you mean yeshiva? He goes, I want to go to yeshiva, I don't want to go to school, I want to go to yeshiva. So we thought he was joking at first, but he wasn't joking. And then the next day, he did refuse to go to school. He said he's not going to school anymore. He's going to school. So we thought something happened in school with his friends and this, but it wasn't. Everything was fine. It just he got this idea in his head. So we called this one and teachers and psychologists or whatever. And I thought his son went crazy. You know, he wants to go to yeshiva. But no matter who, what, nothing wouldn't give in. He is not going to school unless he gets enrolled in yeshiva. So we have no choice. You know, we have to send him to yeshiva. So we said, well, what yeshiva? What yeshiva? So we remembered you. So he said, if we're calling you, maybe you can help find a yeshiva for us. So he saw this. He heard this. He saw the power of tefillah that he gave to this boy, the bracha he gave to this boy 13 years earlier. Ezrat Hashem. All our tefillahs that we dove into Hashem should be heard, Hashem should listen, Hashem should accept them, and He should accept our tefillahs and our yearnings for Bias Kol Tzedek, Bimhira, Biyameinu.